From Pacifica Radio, KPFT 90.1 Houston, this is Open Journal in Exile. Open Journal is the Houston community magazine of the airwaves. Join us as Duane Bradley and Stephanie Coleman explore the wonder that is the Petro Metro and the people who make it happen. And now, from our temporary, socially distanced, alternative studios in exile, somewhere in the greater Houston area, this is Open Journal in Exile. Let the conversation begin.
Yes, yes, yes. Welcome aboard. You are tuned in to Open Journal.
Please subscribe to our podcast, which is KPFT OJ. We've made it easy all around.
Yeah, KPFT OJ, just simple as pie. I'm Duane Bradley.
And I'm Stephanie Coleman. It is an exciting week. We will be talking with chartered financial analyst Leo Gold, and it is fitting that we concluded our portion of KPFT's Summer Sizzle Fund Drive with one of our very own, financial planner Leo Gold, who for years was host of the New Capital Show on KPFT. Leo is a financial advisor with his own firm, New Capital Management. Welcome back to KPFT, Leo, and thanks for joining us for this very special edition of Open Journal.
Well, thank you, Stephanie and Duane. It's a pleasure to be with you today. Thank you for inviting me on.
It's great to catch up with you and pick your brain a little bit, because we are in strange times. And one of the important things that people are having to deal with right now is managing their finances, because a lot of folks, I know my son just was one of those millions and millions of people who found their unemployment supplements ending just a couple of days ago. You're listed on the New Capital Management website as a CFA, but I see that it actually is Chartered Financial Analyst. What exactly does that mean?
Well, that's a good question.
Well, thanks. I try to come up with a couple of good ones.
The CFA charter is generally viewed across the world, not just in the United States, but across the world, as the, I guess you'd call it, since we're talking about finances, the gold standard of financial financial analysts. And so people who study for and sit for the CFA charter are generally people who manage money. They might work for insurance companies. They might work for mutual fund companies, might be a portfolio manager for Vanguard or for Fidelity, people who work in private investments and real estate companies. And so generally, when you're hiring somebody who holds the CFA designation, you're hiring somebody who has a strong background in finance. You might find them in corporate finance also, people who are in banking. So the study of the CFA, the curriculum revolves around different sections. The sections involve the study of equities, which is share ownership, the study of fixed income, which is the study of debt and bonds, the study of real estate and the study of options and the time value of money. And I think one of the most interesting things about the CFA, and a lot of people like to talk about this, is the difficulty of getting it, because you take an exam for 3 years in a row. So the soonest you can earn the title is in 3 years. And you take level one the first year, and the pass rate is about 50% the first year. Then if you get through that, then you get to take the second year exam, and the pass rate on that exam is about 50%. And then you get to take the third year exam, and again, the pass rate is about 50% on that. So if you add and multiply all those probabilities together, the chances that you're going to earn the designation in the first 3 years is about 12.5%. So it's a very tough row to hoe. And I thought there was no way that I was going to earn the designation. I would walk out of each exam feeling like there's no way that I passed it. And I would get something in the mail that said something like, you got about half of the answers right on the exam. Congratulations, you passed. So that's the CFA. There are a lot of flim-flam designations, I think, out in the world for different things. This is not one of them.
Mm-hmm. That's excellent. So we're even more honored to have you on the line.
No. I wanted to educate everybody about it too, because as everybody goes out and maybe seeking professional advice, it is important that people know what's a good designation. CFA is a good one. CFP, the Certified Financial Planner, I think also is a very good, there are a lot of good designations. CFP is a good one I would advocate for. That's somebody who is well-educated in the financial planning process, somebody who has studied financial planning and is skilled and certified in looking at an overall financial plan. And during this time, it may be that this is a good time for you, our listeners, to review your financial plans. And somebody with the CFP designation, I think that's a good designation for you to look at if somebody has it, for someone to help you evaluate where you currently stand and what your future might look like. And a CFP is a very good designation for helping you put it all together and to understand, do I have a good financial plan and a credible way forward, given the challenges and opportunities that I have?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. I mean, not only is it Pledge Driver, we're hoping KPFT has a great financial plan with support, but it is a new market for those who thought they had a great plan until some of these things have happened, and who were on trajectory, had done everything right, were, you know, moving down the road accordingly. The CFP sort of vetting who you go to and running away from a bunch of scams, which seem to also be very big at this time, is something to really consider for the everyday person. For someone who either didn't think they would need this level of resetting in their life, or someone who's a young student or just coming into their life in a new marketplace, where would you recommend they start? Like, how do you find someone who's vetted and capable and sort of enter into this conversation of financial planning and financial chartered analysts for conversation and discussion?
Well, Stephanie, that's a great question. The first thing I would like to recommend, if you are looking to find a financial advisor, and if you don't know of any and you don't know anybody and nobody's being recommended, there is a website called the Garrett Planning Network. That's G-A-R-R-E-T-T planningnetwork.com. And this is a, I believe that it is a nonprofit. Cheryl Garrett started it. And it's a place, it's a network where they will help match you up with a financial planner. And So GarrettPlanningNetwork.com, I think, is a really good place to start. And they will help you find somebody who will help work with you, for example, on an hourly basis. If you want to pay somebody on an hourly basis to help you put together a financial plan, Garrett is a very good place to do that. Mm-hmm. So I would recommend starting there. You can also look at the FPA, the Financial Planning Association, also is a nonprofit. That is the organization that certifies the CFP designation. And So FPA is another good place to go. Both of those sources will help put you in touch, if it's in the Houston area or other areas, with people who are focused on financial planning rather than trying to cram you into this investment or that investment.
Right.
So those are two sources, Stephanie. I'm really glad you asked that, because sometimes people just don't know. Mm-hmm. And so those are two really good sources for looking things up. Now, also, the Securities and Exchange Commission, SEC.gov, has its own database of advisors and firms. And I recommend that you look there also, so that, let's say you've identified five or three or whatever number of different advisors or planners that you are thinking about working with, the SEC.gov website and database is another good place to go where you can get additional information on advisors and planners, both the firms and the individuals. And it will say if there's been any disciplinary problems in the past that a planner or an advisor has had to disclose. It will talk about their practice, and increasingly there are documents and brochures that advisors and planners have to post to the SEC website. So I think, given those three sites that I've mentioned, the Garrett Planning Network, and the FPA and the SEC website. Those are three good places where you can begin to put together some names of people who might be able to help you put together your own financial plan.
You're tuned to Open Journal on Pacifica Radio 90.1 FM. We are visiting with Leo Gold. He is a chartered financial analyst, and we welcome you on with us today. Thank you for joining us, and thank you for your support of Open Journal and KPFT, this commercial-free, independent, community-based radio station. I'm Dwayne Bradley.
And I'm Stephanie Coleman. As we talk about where we're evolving, you know, I think even the best of us and the most creative minds had no idea that we would be here as a country, as a planet. 12 months ago, you couldn't have convinced anyone. With what's going on both in health and our economies today, what are you most worried about and what are you most optimistic about?
Well, I'm most worried about a re-election of Donald Trump and the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. It is what concerns me the most, because I think that that result would really be devastating and would stop the United States from moving forward to meet the opportunities that we have. And it would represent another election of minority interests. And when I say minority interests, I mean interests that are not in the majority. And I think that that is highly, highly corrosive to our democracy. So that's what worries me more than anything. The good news is I think that there is a very good chance that that's not going to happen. And I think if it doesn't happen, that the country is going to be in a great position to finally take advantage of the opportunities that we have as a nation to rebuild ourselves. And this isn't just about electing Joe Biden president. In many ways, I think Biden, if he were to be elected, would be a president who would, I don't want to say stand aside, but would allow others to help lead. That's my impression of him, is that he's in a position to allow others who are in wonderful positions in all walks of life and society to help lead. We just took a trip. My family had a camper we bought, and we just took a month-long trip across the heartland of the country. And it was amazing, especially up in the northwest part of Texas that we came through, around Sweetwater, Texas, and Snyder, Texas. Dwayne probably knows these places to see. Sure. As far as the eye can see, wind turbines. I mean, literally across the horizon. And so we were driving through, and I said to my son, August, you know, Augie, I must be seeing 200 or 300 of those right there in just one view off to the left of the truck. And how much is one of those cost? And so he got on his trusty phone and looked it up. $1 to $2 million a piece.
Wow.
And so if you're looking at 300 wind turbines, you're looking at anywhere from $300 to $600 million in investment that's gone into just one area of the horizon that you're looking at. And then you look to the right and you see another 300, and you look in back of you and it's another 300. And so we truly are on the way to making an alternative energy present and future. And it's visible in I wouldn't call it a short drive from Houston, because it was a long drive from Austin to get down there. And, you know, but you can drive 7 hours or so and you can see the future existing right there in wind power. And there's so, so much more that we as a country can do in these areas, in energy, in rebuilding our inner cities. These things have become almost cliches. The question is, will we as a country be able to overcome the really dilapidated political structure that we have? And everybody sees that now. Mm-hmm. And reinvent ourselves politically, reinvent our energy grid, reinvent our urban areas. And I am super, super excited that we're going to do that. I really, really do believe that we may be seeing our finest moment on November 3rd of this year and in the days beyond it. I am really, really excited about that. And if it happens, my goodness, I think the sky's the limit for the country and the world.
So following up on that, Leo, are you at all concerned that that our current president may find anything short of an overwhelming vote of dismissal as something suspect, something that he will dispute something that he will not accept?
I think he could be voted out 95% to 5% and would still claim that he had been cheated. You know, I don't think there's any number of I don't think there's any rebuke that he would accept, even one that's so overwhelming it's historic in nature. So he's not the question. The question is everybody else. Is there some number where everybody else, especially those who are supporters of the Republican Party, will sit back and say, whoa, we've been trounced? That's really what my hope is. Trump, I don't think anyone should have any hope that he would ever accept any defeat.
What about the confluence of the pandemic and voter suppression? How concerned are you on those fronts?
Well, I don't know. I've been thinking about that. And the pandemic is giving us all, I don't know about more time, but I think people are getting more time. Things seem slower to me and slowed down to me. That's my general impression of it. I don't think that's a bad thing. Life, at least in our household, was being lived at a really fast pace with two teenagers in school and business and social lives and just living in an urban area. And I think that with things slowing down, people are getting some time to think about things a little more carefully, including that they're going to vote and how they're going to vote and and with what intention they're going to vote. And I'm hoping that despite the difficulties that the pandemic presents from a logistics standpoint and a health standpoint, it's going to be offset by a welling up of people to vote. And I think the fact that people are not doing a lot of other things as well, my guess is that the force of the people on November 3rd is going to be so built up like a massive amount of water behind all the dams I saw as we took our road trip this past summer. Massive amounts of water behind a dam, that dam is just going to burst in a show of democracy. And we've seen shows of democracy in other countries occur where people have gotten the right to vote and exercised it. And it's always been an inspiring sight for us as Americans to see that in other countries. What would be more appropriate than for us, in many ways, the birthplace of democracy in the world, to show the rest of the world that we stand as tall, if not taller, than anybody for democracy? And so in many ways, I'm hoping we see our finest moment on November 3rd. That is the potential. Mm-hmm. And my hope is that that is where we go. So I'm optimistic. I'm getting excited about it, too. I really am.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we're all with you on that one, Leo. And knowing that we are having to tape this program live a few days before it's being heard now by folks up and down the Upper Texas Gulf Coast, in front of and behind the Pine Curtain, on and off the island and all around the planet and into near Earth orbit, as it were.
And into Sweetwater wind farm territory.
That we also don't know, as we're visiting with you, whether or not Joe Biden has actually pulled the announcement that's, you know, been waiting in the wings. We're being teased with it many times a day. I'm getting emails asking me A, B, C, D, E, or F. Tell us which one you want. Tell us which one you want. Tell us which one you want. If you were Joe Biden's, you know, in his right hand right now, and he's like, Leo, I've got to tell everybody who is going to be my running mate. Who would you pick and why?
And it would need to be an African American female. Is that right?
Not necessarily, but it's,
if so, I would pick Stephanie.
A female, yes. No, Stephanie. She could handle it.
Yeah. She would be my choice.
I would change some things for sure.
No. Wow, it's a tough one, Dwayne. You know, I do think there's something to be said for Biden. I have seen him. He does seem a little slower. There have been many comments on maybe he has some incipient slowing, and I think that's fine if that's the case. I think we have such a horrendous person as president right now that we just need a nice person who's lived some life. And if he has a bit of dementia or a bit of cognitive impairment, I just think that's okay right now. I really do. I think the nation needs somebody who who has some compassion and some empathy for other people.
Yeah.
And he certainly does. He has a life story. He lost in an unbearable to think about. Lost,
right.
I believe it was his wife and a child.
Yes.
And
then,
we can only, those of us who have never experienced anything like that cannot even comprehend the pain of that. And he carries that pain with him, as opposed to this current president who carries nothing. And so, I think there's something to be said for Biden picking somebody who is going to be supportive of him and is going to be a true right hand to him. And if he doesn't say something exactly perfect or doesn't do something exactly perfect, somebody who's going to be able to step in and basically say, hey, lay off. This man is doing the best he can. And so I would say that he should pick somebody where that chemistry is there. And I think he'll be making the right choice. And I have no idea who that is. That takes two people getting in a room together. And what transpires between the two people is beyond words. It's beyond analysis. It's just
kismet.
It's the way it's kismet. That's it. What it is. You got the word. It's kismet. It takes place in the ether. Right. And it's, do we like each other and do we have a feeling? And it truly is beyond words. So that would be my answer. I think he'll.
Some people are saying that for them, this is a good time and that there's these wonderful opportunities for investment and property. It's going into the right way. Is that the correct way we should be looking at a negative flow in the economy as an opportunity, or should we be looking at other ways of increasing and keeping funding and costs and property high? I know that's a sort of weird question, but there are some people who really celebrate this as a good thing to reset economy, that it might have gone a bit out of control. but there are those who see this loss as a opportunity. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that we're going to continue to see the Federal Reserve Bank of the United States support asset values. That is how the Fed sees its role, as that they can best use their powers during a crisis to support asset values. And I think it's important that asset values be supported. I don't think it should be done willy-nilly, and I don't think it should be done mindlessly. But when we have a crash in asset values, it really, really adds gasoline to the fire. So whether it's real estate or it's bonds or it's stocks or other assets, I think it's important that the Federal Reserve be able to step in and support asset values. At the same time, it's clear that the federal government is going to have to do its share to assist the economy. The federal government cannot only rely on the Federal Reserve. I've got to come up with the right federal investments in the country. And that means helping people with unemployment assistance. It also means to support people with job training and to also do additional work in making investment in alternative energy and other areas of the economy. So it can't only be the Federal Reserve. It's got to be other efforts by federal government, local government, state government as well, Stephanie.
Wow, it does take all of us. We do need to come together on this, and it doesn't matter where we stand, because we're standing on this as a nation. I think, you know, you make a great point. Often we've been able to divide it as a group that has and a group that does not, but this is sort of a all or nothing approach in order for us to sort of have prosperity.
We all need to see it, that we're all in this together. That's exactly right. And economy means household. It comes from the Greek word for household. And we can all agree that if you're talking about an economy, you're talking about a household and a national household. Imagine you have a household where there's, I don't know, let's say there's seven people in the household, two parents and there's five children. Or maybe there's two parents and a couple of grandparents and three children. And four are doing well, or three are doing well, and three or four are not doing well. You know, imagine that household. When we say not doing well, struggling financially and struggling with health and struggling with prospects, that's going to be a very, very difficult household to live in. And what do you do when you live in that household? Well, you start to try to help the people who are struggling in the household. That's how you make the household better. You don't say, oh, you're doing great, so let's help you do better. Mm-hmm. That's not how we behave in our own personal households. We look at where the problems are and the people who are struggling, and we try to help them to solve their problems, whatever they may be. And why we think it's any different in the national household is beyond me. It's exactly the same. So, yes, economy means household. It's from the Greek for household. And we have to begin to behave with our national household the way we do with our own personal households.
So to maybe expand that a little further, Leo, to the global household that we as humanity share, we have a couple of very large competing economies in play here on top of all of the dynamics of a global pandemic and all of those ramifications that are very, very personalized, depending on whether or not you actually are impacted deeply or peripherally by this this ongoing pandemic. But here we have, and this is oversimplifying it, but we have Xi's China, we have Trump's America, we have this clash of economies and personalities and cultures. How concerned are you, and what's your take on that?
So, Duane, what I would say about that is that, as I noted earlier in our conversation, we as a family just traveled in a camper across the heartland of America. I hate that word, actually. I mean, what is not heartland anywhere in this country, right? I mean, there's heart everywhere, but we'll call it the central part of the country. And we had to stop in and buy some things to equip ourselves along the way fairly regularly. We needed a mat, or we needed a flashlight, or you get the idea. Mm-hmm. And very often these products were made in China. And I have always tried to have an open heart when I have bought something and I see that it's made somewhere else, whether it's China or somewhere else. I've tried to think about, who is it that made this for me? Who made this for me? What did they go through to make this for me? When did they have to get up to go to work? What was their commute like? And what were their working conditions like? And what gratitude can I have in my heart, knowing that here I am in the middle of the United States, somewhere in Kansas, and I'm able to purchase a mat or a flashlight, and that we need to ease our way in our travel across the country? And I think that if everybody, the leaders included, began to open their hearts in gratitude to those who work to manufacture and those who work to produce for others, that we will all see the way forward. It doesn't mean that we don't need to make agreements and we don't need to make arrangements that are going to be beneficial for everybody. But the way that these leaders are going about things, that if you get something good, it's bad for me. If I get something bad, it's good for you. That this is the wrong mentality to have. And I think the way becomes clear almost immediately, the minute that we begin to think about gratitude to those who work to produce for others of us. It's kind of a very general, touchy-feely answer that I've given you, but I do think that that's where the answers begin. And so that's what I would say, is that these two leaders, neither of them, Trump or Xi, seem to be speaking the language of gratitude to workers. And if we would get back to the language of gratitude for workers, whether they're American workers or Chinese workers, nobody says that it's only Americans who are entitled to a job. People who are Chinese are entitled to a job, and people who are Guatemalan are entitled to a job. Everyone's entitled to work that is meaningful and gives their life meaning. And that's where we should be going with it. And so that's my answer, is that we must begin with gratitude.
That's great. Thank you, Leo.
That's a part of the business of being alive in a capitalist system, right? There is a human factor to this.
We must do that, Stephanie, and we're starting to do it in the area of food. So many people who are supporters of KPFT, our family included, when we go to the store, we try to find maybe eggs where the hens have pasture and freedom to lay eggs, and a healthy living environment and beneficial treatment from egg farmers. Why shouldn't we do the same thing with mat makers and flashlight makers?
Right.
You know, why is that any different? That people who supervise and oversee the creation of organically farmed eggs, we acknowledge them in that way, but we don't with flashlights and mats and so on. And I think that the whole world needs to gather its gratitude and begin to express it to each other. And then we can banish people like Donald Trump to the dustbin of history.
That's very clear opinion there, Leo Gold. Very clear.
We are visiting with Leo Gold. You're tuned to Open Journal on Pacifica Radio. We're discussing financials and the state of the world and his role as a chartered financial analyst in that world. Thank you for joining us. I'm Dwayne Bradley.
And I'm Stephanie Coleman. It really is a pleasure to speak with you, not just because of your knowledge, Leo Gold, but you've sort of lived it. You have a broad experience. You have a KPFT value system, really being holistic in your thought and human in your approach. And for that, we're so very grateful. As not only we're trying to organize our finances, but people who had jobs and who are on unemployment or trying to figure out what to do with their health care, what are some things that we should be thinking between juggling retirement, healthcare, savings, stock market, cryptocurrency, new app ways to invest from home? Are those things sort of, snake oil salesman kind of
gold, pieces? Gold is going sky high right now. Shouldn't I be buying gold coins and hiding them under my bed or something?
Yeah, I know. It's tempting to chase those investments that are doing really well, and tempting to think that we can hop on some sort of investment train and solve our financial issues that way. I was talking to a client this morning who has been having some difficulty and berated himself, if only I had put everything on Apple. But we should all try to avoid those sorts of impulses to chase after whatever the financial fad is, because almost invariably it ends poorly. Whether it's gold or Bitcoin, and I'm not making any recommendations for or against anything. I'm just saying that generally what we have found to be the case is that a diversified portfolio for your savings is best, diversified according to your ability to take risk, and having balance in all areas of your financial life. So it may be that you need to be looking at changing jobs. That may not be very easy right now given the pandemic, but it may be something that you can at least begin to take a look at and to plan and look into during this time period. Nobody says that you have to sit still where you are because we have a pandemic. This may be a good time for you to look at what would that next job be if I could do it, or begin to talk to a recruiter, begin to lay some plans for when we come out of the current period, where you would like to land. It may be that this is a good time for you to do some job retraining or look at changing careers. So there are a lot of things that you can do financially during the pandemic. You don't have to sit and wait and take the attitude that, well, this pandemic's on and I can't do anything and I have to wait for the vaccine. No, this time is the same as any other time as regards your finances and your career, and you should proceed as such. That is really the wise thing to do. And don't think that if I buy gold, it's all going to be okay. My finances are going to be assured. I'm going to go put it all on gold because gold can go down in value just as it can go up in value. Mm-hmm. So be careful with what you're seeing, as always, in the financial press, and be careful chasing any sort of investment that's getting a lot of publicity right now. I don't say if you want to invest a little bit or some portion of your savings in a particular investment that doesn't make sense, but do be careful. Because as always, the financial press is not taking any rest right now, and it will be continuing to hype whatever is doing well, whether that's Apple stock or gold or Bitcoin or whatever.
So let me ask you this just briefly. I know we don't have time to really get into this in depth, and I don't want to go too far out on a tangent here, but I look in the business pages of the paper, and I see businesses after businesses. Neiman Marcus has gone bankrupt. The company that owns Men's Warehouse and Joseph A. Bank has just gone bankrupt. Big companies, legacy companies in American history. Brooks Brothers has gone bankrupt, you know. And yet we see in the midst of this financial crisis, we see trillions of dollars being invented out of thin air by our government and the Federal Reserve. And simultaneously, we see that even in this crisis where tens of millions of people are out of work, that the stock market seems to be approaching record highs. That just seems counterintuitive to my small brain. Yours is larger. What can you share from your perspective, Leo?
Well, people need to remember that the stock market and the economy don't always and frequently don't move in the same direction. That's nothing new. For example, in March of 2009, the stock market hit bottom, mid-March. The economy wouldn't hit bottom until October of that year. So, you know, that was a whole half a year plus where the stock market was going in the other direction. But remember, the bond market is buoyant now also. We're still seeing extremely low interest rates, which means that bond prices are very, very high. Number one, as I talked about, the Federal Reserve has stepped in to provide support, and that is working. But the market also is saying, we see profits in the future for companies. And the reason the market sees profits in the future for companies is that we do not see in this pandemic across the world any move by governments to nationalize businesses, right? We would have seen it already if that was going to happen. We certainly would have seen it in the airline business. The airlines in the United States would be bankrupt without government assistance that they've gotten, right? And you would think that the federal government would, if it wanted to, would have gone ahead and said, we're taking you over. You are bankrupt. We're going to put money in. We're going to keep everybody on the payroll, but we now own the airlines. That's not what's happened. So what that means is that the model of private enterprise across the world has won out. There is no move, as there was in Russia in 1917 and other countries after that, for the government to take over business. And so shareholders are being left with their shareholdings supported by government money. And therefore, the market says they're going to live to fight another day for the most part. And there are profits out there on the horizon. Now, there are some industries that are in real, real distress, and our industry players are having to declare bankruptcy. Dwayne, you noted the retail sector and the apparel sector especially. Lord & Taylor has declared bankruptcy, and Neiman Marcus and so on. And those businesses have been under pressure for a long time. This isn't just something that's new. Restaurants are also under pressure. And I would say that in both of those cases, the United States has been over-retailed. It's been over-retailed in clothing, and it's been over-retailed in food. I mean, we know that you can pretty much get any clothing and any food on any corner in the United States. And why is that? Because that's where investment has gone into in the United States. So those businesses, unfortunately, are not going to be saved. What we're hoping, what we should be hoping, is that we will see other businesses born where people who worked in those industries and capital that's been in those industries can move into other industries. And hopefully those industries will be in alternative energy, will be in alternative food and healthy food, organic food, will be in rebuilding inner cities and education in those areas. Hopefully we can take people who are working in checkout lines and counters in Lord & Taylor and in, some Tillman Fertitta restaurant, and people will be working in other jobs. And hopefully those jobs will be better jobs, because frankly, the jobs that we lose in retail, they haven't been the greatest jobs, have they?
It is a challenging place to see the shift. We've grown so accustomed to this lifestyle that paradigm shift, I think, is going to take some major adjustment. And as we talk about investing, as always, KPFT is a powerful investment in conversation. And just as you, as a family member for KPFT, and have watched us grow and watch it grow and helped it grow, do you think that a pledge to KPFT is a good investment? And maybe even inform our listeners how they can learn more about engaging with you through Open Journal or anything like that.
Well, not only do I think it's a good investment, Stephanie, it's an investment that I make every single year. In fact, I just got notification of my annual contribution to KPFT. I send out contributions every summer in August to organizations that I believe in, including World Wildlife Federation and KPFT and Sierra Club and so on. And so it's something that I believe in and something I do every single year. There's not a single year that goes by where I don't provide my own support for KPFT. And I like to think that so much of the political ferment that is in the air right now and so much of the activism that is going on, and people think, oh, I just came to this, that KPFT has been carrying the torch for activism and carrying the torch for change in the United States and in the world for a long, long time, for many, many decades.
51 years.
And so as people finding ways to get active right now in the fight against Donald Trump, people need to realize that they are standing on the shoulders of others. And many of those have come onto KPFT and said their piece and represented their viewpoints for over half a century. And the way that we say thank you is with a financial show of support for KPFT. It's fine to say thank you, and it's fine to express gratitude and to feel gratitude. And I was just talking about that in an answer I gave about China and the United States. But the way you really crossed over into showing gratitude is to show your financial support for the station. And I hope people will.
Well, we want to express our gratitude to you, Leo Gold, for joining us on this special edition of Open Journal, as always, and encourage folks to call that number, 713-526-5738, 526-KPFT, as we begin to wrap Open Journal for this week. Check kpft.org for an archive of this program. Also, subscribe to our podcast. We will have a podcast of this edition up soon, KPFT OJ. And please give us feedback about the program and suggestions. We're always open to your input. And we'd also like to thank those of you who have supported the Open Journal program and KPFT in the past and are doing so right now. Visa, Discover, American Express, MasterCard, all quick, easy, and painless ways of expressing your support. And we do greatly and sincerely appreciate each and every one of you who've done what you can to allow us to do what we can do here through the platform of the Open Journal program. I'm Dwayne Bradley. Thank you.
And I'm Stephanie Coleman. Thank you as well. We are a dedicated all-volunteer production staff, including Rambling Rick Campbell, Susan Phillips, Maverick, and you, our supporters. Thanks for all you do. Thanks for your continued support and contributions. Open Journal theme music provided by Kevin McLeod. Be here with us for Open Journal next time. Thanks again for your support.
And as always, we like to leave you with a thought to carry you through the week. This comes from John F. Kennedy, who said, when written in Chinese, the word crisis is composed of two characters. One represents danger. The other represents opportunity. Take care of each other.